Greetings, this is Hear Her Sports, the Female Athlete Podcast, and I'm Elizabeth Emery. Here in Cleveland, we've been enjoying the 42nd Cleveland International Film Festival, and it was exactly a year ago at last year's festival that I saw the documentary Girl Unbound about the life of Maria Torpekai-Wazir. It's a story that completely transfixed me, so I'm honored and thrilled that Maria is my guest today. I'm in awe of her intelligence, insight, and gratitude. She is Pakistan's top female squash player and has started her own foundation with a mission to bring peace to the world through sports and education. But what I most wanted to know was how Maria, at 4 years old, decided to burn her dresses, cut her hair, and start dressing as a boy. That part of her story strikes me as completely self-aware, confident, and also aware of a direct route to get what she wanted, which was to play outside. We talk about that, gender differences, gender equity, her sister who is in Pakistani politics, being strong and confident, Angelina Jolie, education, the value of sport, and so much more. This episode is jam-packed with incredible quotes. Oh, and one more thing, if you aren't signed up for the newsletter, do so. It goes out every 2 weeks and has information about the episodes, but also teasers and outtakes, plus links to related articles and videos. I think it's fun, I like sending it out, and I like hearing back from you. So let's get to it. Maria, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Of course, it's my pleasure.
Are you at the squash courts now?
I am, actually, yes.
Cool. Last year at the Cleveland International Film Festival, I saw Girl Unbound, the movie about your life, and have been thinking about it ever since. Have you gotten a positive response to the movie? And I suspect that athletic girls and women from all over the world would find a little bit of themselves in you. Is that the case?
It's a good thing to hear that, you know, my life relates to every girl out there, whether it's a, you know, a girl who wants to play sports or a girl who wants to be herself, or a girl that, you know, wants to achieve her dreams in every other field. And the documentary and my book, A Different Kind of Daughter, I think it's very well done and very authentic. So, you know, it's just when I hear back from people and then they hear me speaking, I think they feel that the book or documentary, it's me speaking to them and they feel connected.
Yeah. Did you find it hard to make those movies and be so authentic?
Well, this was kind of, it was kind of a real life kind of thing because I was just busy doing my own thing and camera was like following me like a shadow. And at the same time, the book was done like over the years and the book writer became a good friend of me and we were just talking and she was just trying to understand how I behave, how I talk and everything. And she did a great job, you know, Catherine Holstein.
Yeah, she did do a really good job. She had a very poetic way of speaking.
Right. I think she was able to capture all those, the way I speak. So it was very, interesting.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to give a very brief history of why your story is so remarkable?
Well, for me, it's my story, and this is how I lived my life. It was kind of times that, you know, you're left out with zero options. And the time that, you know, I kind of felt that I want to be outside playing sports, I was young, 4 and a half. And that was the time when I kind of realized the freedom that boys have and the, you know, the restrictions that are on girls and the limited space for girls is like, you know, stay at home and, you know, this is their limited space, but boys can just go anywhere and play, you know, in the mountains, you know, it's just so a lot of space and so much fun. So I felt like this is I want to be. And I was just, I think it's written by God. I have a strong faith and I believe that it's just the way this is the software that was installed in me by God. God wanted me to be that way, to behave that way. So at age 4 and a half, I decided to burn all my girly dresses and cut my ponytail to be myself, the way I want to be. So, but the thing is that I have a strong father and he supported me. He didn't care about the society, what they think. Even though he went through a lot of pressure, a lot of criticism, they put him in mental jail. They attacked him, tried to kill him so many times. and he escaped from there. So all his life, you know, he kept running, escaping and moving us around in the tribal areas from area to area. And they called him, you know, a man with no shame or a dishonorable man, all because he wants to educate his daughters and let them be themselves. And I believe that in our countries, if any girl is a high achiever, I think there is a father or brother behind that, some man behind that, you know, supporting her. So that kind of thing. And I was good with that, that I was able to utilize my opportunity well, at the same time polish my qualities that God gifted me. So I was athletic since my childhood. I grew up very strong among boys, fighting, and you know, always, you know, in the middle of fight, like bruised and bleeding, and my father was always in trouble. But yet he never discouraged me, and he always tried to find positive ways to channelize my energy. And finally, I ended up in the weightlifting after, you know, I got into a huge fight, and I got a brick to my head, and I was like soaked in blood, and I got like 12, 13 stitches in my head. So after that, my father kind of, luckily we were in a city, Peshawar, at that time, and my father felt that there are people play sports in here. And rather than telling me that, you know, I'm 12 years old and I'm going to grow and I'm going to, you know, it's going to be harder for me being a girl hiding myself anymore. So in the society, and it would be very difficult and dangerous in many ways. You know, I can be sexually abused and all those kind of things, but my father, rather than thinking that way, he even tried to make me stronger and stronger so that I can fight back the society that is so much anti-women rights. So he put me in weightlifting with the name of Genghis Khan. And I, you know, luckily I came second in all over Pakistan boys championship with the name of Genghis Khan under 16. And I was 12 years old. So after that, I fell in love with squash because squash courts were right there, and I saw some kids playing squash. So I kind of fell in love with that sport, and I asked my dad to, you know, that I want to play squash. So even though he couldn't afford rackets and all, you know, this is expensive sport, but he never showed, you know, that anything is impossible. He said, yes, definitely we will do it. And he never made us feel that, you know, that money is something that is important. He always said, when you have a will, I will make sure that money is available for you and you do things. What, you know, you put your effort into these things. But luckily, you know, I got into squash, and I was gifted a squash racket, my first squash racket, by the Squash Academy. So the director of the Squash Academy, he didn't know that I was a girl. And once he asked my dad for my birth certificate, you know, just to enroll me in the academy. And that was the time my father had to reveal my true identity. So I was very lucky again that, you know, this guy was very positive. Though he asked a question from my dad that, are you sure that's your daughter? And he smiled. But then, you know, he said, it's a great thing for our country right now that, you know, for our province, that a girl is finally playing from these areas. So he gifted me a squash racket.
The story, I mean, there's so many things about that story that I want to ask you about. I mean, one of the things is just how strong your whole family is. And I mean, not just your father, but you knowing with such certainty at such a young age, you know, like who you were. I think that's amazing.
Well, that's, I think, you know, when we look at animals, we train animals, but when we look at humans, we educate humans. And education is very important for everyone. You know, we have to bring awareness to the people. And once parents start spending time with their kids and trying to, you know, like logically explain everything and be friendly and positive, and you know, they're always about gaining knowledge. So I think that was the environment we had at home. My father always believed that our house is a university, And, you know, he would buy those secondhand books, you know, that ends up in our countries from the Western countries. And he would buy them by kilogram, like 1 kilogram books, 2 kilogram books, like that. And he would bring them home, and then he would learn himself. My mom would learn herself and then teach us. So it was a kind of good environment we had. And we were always raised with very humanitarian kind of knowledge, information, in a very humanitarian way. And the Islam that we learned was very, I think that's the true Islam that my dad taught us. It's very about everyone. It's about peace. It's about humans. It's about, animals and plants and our planet Earth. And I think it's about inclusion and everyone equality. So that's kind of thing. And it also about, you know, whether someone does not agree with you or is from different religion, you still have, you're all brothers and sisters. So that kind of really Islam we learned. And I think that's the true Islam that I believe, because I read Quran and that's what I find.
Mm-hmm. What role does religion play in your life now?
I think when there are tough times in life, I think I only hope, the only hope that is I reach out to God, I would say. I feel calm, I feel peace in there, and I believe that God responds. To be honest, nowadays, it's it's kind of time too that a lot of people might believe, might not believe, you know, in such things. But, you know, everybody is different. That's all good. That's all okay. But the thing is that for me, I think God is very important. And whoever I am, I have seen miracles in my life. And I cannot even imagine that I'm the same girl from Waziristan, from the tribal areas, you know, and I'm sitting here in the U.S. playing squash in shorts and skirts, and I just don't know. It's just how it happened. It's just a miracle. But it was a long journey and full of miracles.
Mm-hmm. It's really a nice story. When you burned your girly dresses, did you want to become a boy, or you just wanted the freedom that they had?
At that time, when you were young, I think you see that, you know, because I wanted to get in the boys' games, like they were playing marbles, they were flying kites, they were watching the horse races. So, you know, those kind of things. And I felt like, you know, I should be there. And I had a different kind of clothing and hairstyle. So at that age, you feel you're looking different just because of your clothing and hairstyle. Otherwise, you are same. You don't see yourself as one gender or the other, a girl or a boy. You don't see as yourself as a girl or a boy. You see as a human. So that was the thing for me. You know, when I burnt my clothes and I changed my hairstyle, I think that was the time I felt like similar to boys, and I was even stronger than them.
Right. Do you think that dressing like a boy and hanging out with the boys made you braver, or did you end up thinking like a boy, or did you just become more of who you already were?
I think there's less pressure on boys than girls. You know, girls are from childhood, they are taught how to talk, how to sit, how to behave, and how to this and that, where to go and where not to go. And then when there are too many restrictions, it actually stops you from growing up, like growth. It stops you from being yourself. It stops your confidence. And boys have less restrictions. They can do whatever they want. So that kind of thing, I think when I grew up like that, I just had more. It wasn't because of girl and boy. It was more like, you know, no restrictions. That's why I'm very outspoken. I'm not scared of anyone. Whatever I do, I do it. I don't care about anyone. And I think that that's how should be. Girls should be like that, rather than me putting restrictions, like unnecessary restrictions for no reason. I believe when I see women, you know, when I see in the tribal areas or even our people from villages, they come to the cities, and you would see that the women are sitting in the back of the car, in the back seat, and the mirrors, you know, the windows of the cars are closed and dark, like black, and still they are inside the car, they are in burqas. Sometimes I feel like those men think that women don't have mind or brain. To be honest, women are strong and intelligent, and you don't have to teach them what's right and wrong. You know, being human, we do know, everyone know, that what's right and wrong, and even though right and wrong is also kind of, I would say, we have created, like, I think what's right is when it's not affecting anyone in the world or any other human or plant or animal. You know, you're not abusing them, you're not hurting them, you're not paving a wrong path for them. That is right. But if you are doing something that is affecting everyone else, that is wrong. We know that.
Right. So what do you think is so dangerous about girls playing sports? What's so threatening about that? You know, in your book, you talk a lot about how much aggression and threat you experienced because you were playing sport.
Right. Well, the thing is that, you know, we are kind of, you know, in a society that has lack of information or education. So what happens, you know, ignorance itself is a kind of dangerous. And when there's too much ignorance, you know, there will be definitely wildness. So what happens, they don't know, you know, the thing is that they don't know they think education is, you know, is not good for them. It's Western and it's Western propaganda, a lot of in the villages, or they think it's a wastage of time. It's the end, girls are going to get married. What are they going to do? It is of no use for them. And then they think also I'm just talking about percentage. There are people with different concepts. And some people would say it's not in Islam. Some would say maybe it's, you know, introduce it. It's kind of vulgarity kind of thing that it, you know, when the girls are more aware and get education, they disrespect men and they also do what they want. And at that time, you know, it's out of their control. So men want to control them. It's kind of that kind of thing. And men think that it's their women are their property. So rather than human, rather than partner, rather than their sisters or mothers or, you know, wives, they think this is their property. So this is how our men grow up. And then they end up wild and abusing women.
Right.
That kind of thing is dangerous. And, you know, when I see this is all about education, I'm talking, even education has that kind of response. They have such reactions towards women going to school. So then you can imagine if girls are going to sports, they think they are, you know, they don't have any good character or they're not good girls. It's kind of very not good mentality. But right now, I think things are changing in Pakistan. Since when I started playing, it was very different. It was still people thought that, you know, I was harassed and, you know, bullied, and it was very abusive response towards me on every step. But the thing is, because they thought that I am playing squash just because I'm there for them rather than playing squash. So for them, it's kind of no less than, I would say, prostitution if I use it a little bit lesser, kind of a lighter way, if I say it. If there is any other word, that's in their mind. It's that kind of thing.
Right. It's interesting, though, because, I mean, obviously in Pakistan, it's much more extreme. But, I mean, certainly...
No, but things are changing. Things have changed since, you know, right now I feel that it has been so much chaos. My sister is very outspoken. She's in politics. Even though she went through a lot of pain, I would say. You know, she was facing harassment. I think, you know, in August 2017, she had a huge press conference in Pakistan, and she spoke up about harassment that she was facing. And you can imagine when you talk about such things in our society, what is going to be the response? Like, men were starting running campaigns against her with fake Facebook IDs or Twitter accounts, and started running campaigns to throw acid on her, kill her. And they were pretending to be like, you know, like fake IDs, like women, you know. They were trying to be like they were trying to run fake IDs in the name of women and trying to attack her, right? And we were actually, we had severe threats in this last year in August. We were locked in a two-bedroom apartment, even though she, my sister, was the strongest woman in Pakistan. She's a parliamentarian, and this is the highest level position. Yet you can imagine that this is what women have to go through when they speak up about such issues. And when you go towards, you know, other than the women who are not on such powerful positions, you can imagine they will never ever get justice or a voice that they can ever explain themselves or stand up for themselves, this kind of thing. But the good thing is that, you know, we women have to fight. We women have to stand up not only for ourselves but others. And this is our, this is you know, we shouldn't be, we should not care about the outcome anymore, because this is where US used to be like 100 years ago when women started running in Boston Marathon and all those, you know, and they were stopped from that, but they tried. And today you see there are so many men and women, they're running together, so much support for each other. This is how we should be.
Yeah, I was also going to say that, you know, some of our professional women athletes are still fighting for a lot of the stuff that you're talking about in terms of equal pay. You know, like the hockey team is, the U.S. hockey team is trying to fight for equal pay. The U.S. soccer team had to fight for equal pay. And the same is true of the women's basketball. So, I mean, yes, you know, like we have a 100-year gap, but we still don't have total equality here. So,
Well, the thing is, step by step, we will get there for sure. And it's kind of the mentality, how we raise our sons and our daughters. You know, I think it will change eventually. This is the responsibility of mothers, how we raise our sons. That's how I should, I think. And rather than thinking, you know, being offended by, you know, women, you know, being empowered or being equal, I think no man should offend, because the real man would not get offended, because they, being human, we are all equal, and we all have, you know, weaknesses or strengths or qualities. We just are, God created us, men and women, for each other as partners, as supporters, as being, you know, as a comfort for each other. We both are good in many ways, you know. The world would not be able to run without women, I would say. It's important to be, you know, be kind.
Right. And I like it. I mean, yes, I agree that, you know, women's role is to raise good sons, but vice versa of that, I really like your example of your father raising a really strong pair of women, daughters, who can go out into the world and make a difference.
That's very true. Like, we should raise strong daughters, that's for sure. And at the same time, for girls also have to have belief in themselves. I feel even girls here, sometimes they are lacking that ability to have confidence. I think it's important for them to think of themselves that they are strong, they're equal, and they're no less than anyone. And this is very important for girls to think that way, because they are equal.
Yeah, I'm hopeful about that. I'm seeing changes now in the younger girls in that level of confidence. I think it's great.
Right, right.
So let's talk a little bit about squash. Because you're at the squash court, I know that you're still playing. Tell me a little bit about it.
Squash has been a little bit difficult for almost a year and a half. It's been a very difficult time recently for me. You know, maybe one day I will talk about it, but not this time. But I couldn't really focus on it, and I just couldn't feel being on court. I was, you know, there was a time that, you know, because my family and myself, we did so much for Pakistani people. And, you know, for being honest and for being true, I think the response that we get, and it was very abusive, it just hurt me so badly too. And but, you know, we go through this situation for a reason. We have to learn. And I think I still am not upset with those people, because I think that they need education and they need to put their energy into positive side and play sports rather than, you know, fixing others, we have to fix ourselves. The change will start from ourselves. You know, I think the time we start knowing about ourselves, who we are and what we should do and what is our destiny by God and what are our responsibilities as human, I think everyone can be an activist. Everyone can be a leader in their own way. And I think this is how we should act, very responsibly. But the thing is that right now I feel that it's a good time to be around my family. I moved back to Pakistan recently, a week ago. So I feel that, you know, I think it's a good time and I'm going to stay there a little bit and maybe I can just start training a little bit there.
That's a big move.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to ask you what your life was like in Canada, but you're moving.
No, I was in Canada. And I came to New York. A tough time, but I mean, good time too. And there were times that I learned a lot. So maybe one day.
Yeah, I hope
I'll talk about that.
Well, you know, I know that you have your foundation. And one of the questions I want to ask about is, you're doing this great work, and one of the pillars of your foundation is the importance of sport. So why is it that you think that sport is so important?
Because I was an aggressive child. I can say I look like this Kim Jong.
No, you don't.
I used to look like him. I had a buzz cut like him.
I've seen pictures, I don't think so.
Right. I think I was like him, and then I changed a lot, and now I'm not like him. And, you know, I would totally tell him to play sports because his behavior will totally change, and I am sure he will disarm, like all the nuclear weapons and everything, because I think this is sports that can change, bring huge change in him. So I believe in sports, and I think that it can make you disciplined, and at the same time connect you to the world and can bring you closer to yourself, like on a soul level, on a spiritual level. And I think you would understand who you are and what your weaknesses are, what your strengths are. And I think sports can totally transform you and cleanse you from all kind of negativity and make you a very positive and responsible human.
Do you think that's true both for people like you who are obviously physical learners and for people like your sister who are much more bookish?
Well, the thing is, sports are, I always would encourage people to play sports alongside education. It's very important because there is an exercise that we do for brain, but then there is exercise but then we have to do for body. And then there is exercise for our soul, means prayers, you know, stay connected to God. So there are three kind of things, and we have to be, studying, playing sports, and be at the same time connected to God. I think these three are very important for our mind, body, and soul.
That's really nice. And, you know, so many cultures who have been successful have similar feelings. I love when I hear people talking sort of in a universal language.
Right. No, I think humans are everywhere same. Whether I'm from Waziristan or someone in the U.S., when you look at the boys, when they reach out to their, like, teenage, they go a little bit out of control, whether they're in jungles or they're in here. So it's the same kind of attitude. Humans are all same.
Right. So what are you doing in the foundation? What are your plans and your goals for the foundation?
Well, the thing is that, definitely the idea is to bring peace to the world through sports and education. And sports is a very huge part of my life. So I would say through my foundation, I want to connect the Eastern world to the West, because that way we can understand each other and all the illusions or fear that we have or hate that we have that can go away. So I have programs like that I'm going to introduce inside Pakistan. I'll be building a sports science university in Pakistan, God willing. And at the same time, there are really quality projects that I'm working on, and it will show up in near future. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Great.
I just hope that people support me on this journey, my foundation, and make it easier for me, because alone is difficult and together we can make it happen.
Sure.
At the same time, I would say there's, I think I have a huge, interest, desire, I would say, to be in Hollywood movies, educational movies, and, I'm a big fan of Angelina Jolie. I met her last time.
You want to be in movies?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. That's awesome.
In Hollywood. Yeah, in Hollywood movies, I feel that my dad gave me all the permission, and why not just reach out to every single thing that I like to do.
Yeah.
And I would really like to be in Hollywood movies, and I hope that, I get into like good movies, like, action movies and stuff like that, educational movies. I think it's a great platform from where, you can get even stronger and people look up to you, and then you can also do a lot of great, great things for them from that platform.
Oh, sure. That's true.
Yeah.
So what are your favorite movies? I know you like Rocky.
I was going to say that. Okay. I like Rocky, and I like, Rush Hour, Jackie Chan movies.
Oh, Jackie Chan. Awesome.
Jackie Chan, Van Damme, Arnold Schwarzenegger. They all have really funny and good, strong movies. At the same time, Angelina Jolie has very good, strong movies. I like her, in a lot of movies. So I wish I get into, I'm given chance in those movies. And, those movies are really fun too. What's that name? Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Harry Potter kind of movies.
Yep. Have you seen Black Panther yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, it's really good. I think you'll like
I've seen the Catwoman.
Okay. And what is it? I mean, you've been involved in so many sports and just sort of running around and riding your bike and this and that. Like, what was it about squash that grabbed your attention?
No, I wasn't involved in so many sports. Like, since childhood, the sports that you call is like natural way of living, just playing. It's like playing. Like, you just play marbles, or you just fly kites, or you just, there's another game, Gulli Danda, or then you do like a dodgeball, or all those kind of things. We have local names for those kind of things, right? Hide and seek and all those. These are fun kind of things. Or toy guns, when you play that. But then you, when you go towards like professional sports, I think the only sport I was introduced was weightlifting, and then I fell in love with squash. And squash is a second biggest sport in Pakistan. So, and I didn't know at that time, but I saw a lot of kids playing, and everybody was so much into it. So I liked the energy, I liked the sport and the rackets, the outfits. So I kind of got into it.
Hmm. I mean, because at least from your book, it sounds like it grabbed you right away.
The squash or?
Yeah, the squash. There was never any doubt that this was a sport for you.
The thing is that I did weightlifting for a few months, but weightlifting also helped me a lot to get stronger. And I think that helped me to be in squash. Squash is such a demanding sport, like physically, and it's so strong. And I think I was able to... I had a really strong hitting, and that helped me to get through it, like in the beginning. We started winning right away.
I was really interested in, again, from your book, that you always were looking for, friends to hang out with, and you sort of hesitated often to call them friends or not.
The thing is that I get along with everyone. I just have such energy, or maybe I say personality, that everybody is happy around me. Like, I talk to kids there, they have fun. And when I'm around my age, people, I think I'm okay with them. And older people, I have a lot to ask and questions. So it's always for them also have fun too. So, but it's really hard for me to say like who is my friend and who is not. I think for me, everyone is friend. Like I can't differentiate between that.
Yeah. And you travel around so much, it sounds like.
I travel a lot, but like people have friends who you say they are friends forever. I don't think I have anyone, but I just can say that I get along with everyone. And right now, I think, you know, I think in Canada, there are a few people that I feel that they are good friends of with me.
And then you have a strong bond with your family, for sure.
Oh, yeah, very strong.
Yeah. One of the parts of your book that really moved me was when you first brought home the winnings from your first squash tournament.
Yeah.
Can you talk to me about supporting yourself as a woman and being able to support your family in that way?
Right. One thing I think in my brain just got in there that, you know, being a man, you know, when I saw men supporting their families and everyone, it got into my mind that I will be supporting my family, like the movie Breadwinner, I would say. Mm-hmm. So that kind of thing got in my mind that men are the breadwinners. And I thought I can be the breadwinner and I'm going to look after my family too. So I was always very cautious. I never asked my mom, dad for like anything, like, you know, buy me shoes or buy me clothes and racket, because the first racket that I got was gifted. And my dad, yes, my dad got me secondhand shoes the first time. Other than that, I started collecting, like, you know, torn balls from the bushes that boys would throw out, like bad balls. And I would collect them, glue them together and play with them for hours and hours. So it was like that. When I would go for the tournament, I know it was hard for my mom, dad financially in this big city, because we are from tribal areas. And when we moved from tribal areas, it became really hard for us to survive that way. Cities are expensive and a lot of bills. So anyways, I was very cautious about that. I would ask my mom to give me like 500 rupees and I would buy myself a bus ticket. I would go in public buses sometimes, you know, like I would travel through Pakistan alone in boyish clothes with my one small bag, like racket bag. And I would arrive there sometimes at midnight and I would tell my mom that, you know, I would have 500 rupees for the ticket, 200 rupees for the ticket, 200 rupees for the food. And then I would win the tournament and then I will come back. Buy my ticket, you know, return ticket. So that kind of attitude I had. And the first tournament that I went for, it was a junior tournament in Washkent. And it was a huge drama there, you know, because everybody thought that I'm a boy and why they're putting my name in girls' draw. So everybody was so nervous and so much arguing. And I was sitting upstairs, you know, in the gallery and watching all that. And they couldn't believe that I'm a girl. So finally, you know, they got my birth certificate and they, even though they still couldn't believe, but they let me play and I started winning. So the first match I would win like so easily. With the young girl couldn't get a single point from me. Any girl who would lose, she would go out crying that they made me play with a boy, you know, like that. So, but, you know, I won the tournament. I got a small bag that had one Schlesinger brown color shorts, socks, one cap, things like that, and 1,400 rupees. So I was very happy and I got my shorts, new shorts, and I gave it to my mom, 1,400 rupees.
Yeah, I mean, have you gotten, I don't know, pushback trying to encourage other women from Pakistan to become breadwinners? I mean, is that one of your goals?
I think the thing is that for girls, it's important to, you know, to think that way, to be like, to think that they're strong, they should be independent. I think it's my goal to give them skills, education, very like basic education is very important. Skills are very important for women in our countries, you know, and sports for sure. I think because the skills would give them confidence and integrity, because they would know that no matter what happens in their life, they can always come back and stand up and, you know, live an honorable life, you know, work hard. rather than begging, rather than asking people for help, rather than being in a miserable condition or situation, I want to protect them, these women. I have seen horrible things happening to women who did not have education. They didn't have any skills. So what happened when their husbands or family men, they die in drone attacks or, in army operations or militants, bomb blasts and things like that. What happens, the women are left out, and what they're going to do, they end up on roads, nothing else. So I want to give them a dignified life.
So you talked a lot about goals just now. So for the next year, what are your, what are your main goals for this next coming year, 2018?
The thing is, I want to get back in squash and start getting fit again. That's my goal for myself. It makes me happy. When I'm happy, then I'm able to help anyone else too. At the same time, as I said, the projects are very, these are huge projects. The university, at the same time, we are working on one of a program for young athletes, connecting them to the, top athletes. So I hope we will be able to do it by next year.
Great. Well,
at the same time, maybe I'll be in a Hollywood movie too.
Yes, I hope so.
Right.
Well, Maria, I really appreciate talking to you. It's been a real pleasure. I look forward to talking again someday to catch up and find out how squash is going and everything else. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks to you for listening. Tell your friends about the podcast. Spread the word about fantastic, strong women speaking up and doing amazing things. Please subscribe on iTunes and encourage people you know to do the same. It really does help more people find the podcast. There are some fun episodes already in the can, so keep listening. Thanks to Agnes Studio, the blog, She Rides Her Bike, Gold Mines, and Leap Strategies for super support and partnerships. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Bye-bye.
Should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, you're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.